welcome to episode 24 from Stories from the VO Booth. I'm your host, voiceover talent and trainer, Tina Zaremba. Today we're talking with my voiceover coach, Jody Gottlieb. Jody's background is in advertising. She's written and produced award-winning promos for CBS, ABC, NBC, Showtime. If it's a major network, she's written promos for them. She's also the co-author of the industry book, TV, Sex, Lies, and Promos. Listen in as Jody describes her process and how she found herself as a voiceover coach. And if you're in New York, you have an opportunity to participate in Jody's voiceover workshop on June 9th. Here's our conversation. Miss Jody Gottlieb, thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, my pleasure, Tina. It's always fun to talk to you.
Appreciate it. So I like to start off by asking everyone, how the heck did you land in voiceovers as a voiceover coach?
I was a producer of commercials, so I got to direct a lot of talent. And then I moved into promos, and I became a writer, producer, director. And I was invited by a lot of those people to come and direct, be a guest director in their workshops. And one day, one of the agents said to me that she heard wonderful things about my direction, and why don't I do that for myself instead of just going in and being a guest director? And I thought, well, she's one of the top agents in the world. I should believe her, right? So, okay, let's try that. You know, I had a full-time job and that went odd hours. So it was a little slow going at first.
That full-time job was writing promos, correct?
Correct. I was at CBS for about 10 years as a director, writer, producer, director, and got to work with all the big names.
And big names, you mean big VO talent in the space?
Yes. Ernie Anderson got me started in promos.
Wow. Yeah. Who else did you work with? I'm just curious.
Don LaFontaine.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, Mark Elliott, Chuck Riley, all those people. And I did book women.
Oh, thank you, Jesus.
Yes.
Thank you, Jesus, for that. So I imagine at that level, you're not really seeing major hiccups because the talent is so pro at that tier, voicing for major national networks. But did you ever notice any type of common, I don't know, themes or hiccups that might happen with talent when they were in a session?
Like you said, at that level, there weren't a lot of major challenges. They did what I asked them to do. I also, being the writer of spots, if I had somebody in mind, sometimes I would hear a voice in my head as I was writing and write to a particular for. Specifically a particular person. But no, at that level, once in a while, they would miss an intention and I would just guide them back. But at that point, it was here's the copy, go do it kind of thing.
Well, okay, so let me ask you this. Being around pros at that level where they're voicing for CBS, ABC, and NBC, do you notice a difference between the way they carry themselves in the booth and in life versus talent that maybe not beginner, maybe they've been doing this for a while, but they still haven't broken through that next level? And what is that difference that you see?
That's an interesting question. You mean the people who have grabbed hold of that golden ring?
Yeah. Like, I'm just trying to figure out what sets them apart, because it's not just location and luck. I mean, it's talent, but there's something else as well. Is it confidence that they just know they can do it and they do it? Or is it, I'm pulling at straws and guessing.
Yeah, I think confidence certainly has something to do with it. My initial reaction to that is it's a matter of luck. Mm-hmm. Now, at that level, the people who are lucky have the skill. They've done the work. So it's where dedication meets opportunity.
And at that level, do you know, have they stopped coaching and training, or are they still working their craft?
They still work their craft. I get talent who has we have to change the schedule 4 times because they're booked, but they still come see me because they want to make sure they don't fall into any old bad habit.
Yeah.
And I admire them for that. A lot of people would just rest on their laurels, but people show up for workshops and they take some privates. You know, not an ongoing thing because they're busy. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I, you know, jump through hoops to get them in. You know, we'll work at 9 o'clock at night because they're finally finished with their day.
Wow. That's kind of like a top athlete like Tiger Woods who continues yes. to work with someone.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. Yeah.
Really cool. So do you hear trends in voiceovers? And if so, what are you hearing within the promo and commercial space?
Okay, I hear trends and I see trends in specs. And those are two different things.
Oh, so what you're seeing in the audition is different than what you think,
what ends up on air. Yeah.
Why do you think that is?
I think what happens in a session is they get the person who responded to the specs and they like it. But they then, in the session, they're not hearing what they're used to hearing.
And are you saying they're not used to hearing, meaning on TV?
On TV, on radio, on the internet, wherever it plays. I do believe that the producers are second guessing what their bosses want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you find that more with promos than commercial? Because I'll say promos that I've worked on with you and with friends of mine who are like full-time doing promos, I'll see conversational for a promo spec and I'll start approaching it in that manner. And they're like, no, keep in mind, this is still a promo. And you've said that to me as well.
Yes.
So I feel like it's more in that space than commercial, or is it kind of evened out where it's both promo?
I think for promo, we have to stop thinking in terms of promo, and I'm putting air quotes around that.
Uh-huh.
And think in terms of storytelling.
Hmm.
When you're doing a commercial, you are asking people to buy their product, spend money, go out, shop, order it online, whatever. But you're still asking people to take action in terms of spending their money. In promo, you're asking people to spend their time. And you want to tease them into asking themselves, what's next? And what is the best way to get somebody to, have you ever read a book? And you always want to turn, if it's a good book, you want to turn the page and see what's next. Same thing in promo. Think of promo as that first page. How are you going to get people to turn that page? How are you going to get people to commit to an hour or a half hour or 2 hours of time in front of their television or to record it, however people watch TV these days. And you want them coming because you've teased them into asking themselves what's next. And the best way to do that is to tell part of the story. It's Scheherazade.
Let's say that again, though. What's odd?
Scheherazade. You know the story about Scheherazade?
I don't. I don't feel educated. Tell me.
Scheherazade was married, this goes back a million years, obviously an exaggeration. Scheherazade was one of the wives of, some mythical king.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was finished with a wife, he would have her banished. And Scheherazade did not want to be banished. So each night when they were together, she would tell him a piece of a story.
Mm.
So he got so wrapped up in the story, he kept having her come back so that, in her experience, storytelling was saving her life. And in his experience, it was what's next? What happens next?
Why are promos so hard if you're coming from a commercial or theater background?
It's a different rhythm. It's a different pace. Commercials do require some acting skills, although they say they don't want it actory. It takes a good actor not to sound like an actor. Promos is straight storytelling. They are a different beast. Well, for one, the writing is different. Commercials can tell a story ending up with buy this product, but promos are usually very short phrases. Sometimes they are responding to an SOT that you can see on the page, but when you're telling the story, it's not, when you're recording, the SOT isn't there. Mm-hmm. So you have to make it cohesive. And personally, I have found that working in short phrases is much more difficult than continuing copy.
Oh my gosh. My biggest fear is when I go into an audition and it's like one line. I'm like, oh my Lord, what am I going to do here?
Yeah.
Let me pivot to, you have an interesting way of coaching. I've never, ever had anyone coach the way that you coach, and yet it really works, especially within the space of voiceovers. Why don't you share a little bit about what that is?
Okay. There are two things that I add to either commercial or promo. One is the physicality. I call it choreography, but because we're usually in limited space, usually our booths are small, we can't go dancing.
No twirling around here.
No twirling around. But physicality brings an energy if you use it properly. I have developed some techniques using your hands and where to place your hands, like we do when we talk. We talk with our hands. Why aren't we using it in the booth? So I've developed some techniques that are very specific to certain genres, comedy, drama, informational, those kind of things. And they require different gestures. I've also developed, well, I didn't develop it. A lot of people use it. I use the word triggers. And some people call it a lead-in. Some people call it a run-up, an on-ramp, whatever. I call it a trigger because we use it to trigger the tone of the spot, whether it be commercial or promo. You need to set a tone or tap into some emotion. And I find that a word or a phrase, something that describes what you're trying to connect with, is very useful.
How did you discover that? Because it blows my mind that you can give me, and you have to be the one to give it to me. I, for some reason, cannot think of the darn trigger or word or phrase to use. How did you discover that these work so quickly? It's like instantaneously, it changes the color of the copy or the delivery of the copy.
I tested my theory out on myself. I do have an acting background, and I would read copy and listen back and go, I didn't quite connect. What am I going to do? So I did what actors call a little backstory, but I don't like to use the word backstory because then it becomes actory, which is what all the specs say, don't be actory. So I said, okay, what's the emotion of the spot? What are we trying to do? What's the intention? And found words or phrases that work. And I tried it on myself and I was absolutely floored.
You tried it on yourself, meaning you delivered it or you actually recorded it?
I recorded it. I recorded it and played it back and back to back with, you know, my cold read versus my triggered read. It was like two different people.
Yeah. And you know, it is completely, because I'm working with you, I know this. And what also kind of blows my mind and makes my brain start to short circuit a little bit is the fact that I can figure out what the emotion is, but if I play to that emotion, it comes off as affected, like a veneer and not having any substance. But yet if it's used within a trigger, it's much more anchored and authentic.
Exactly. The triggers help you focus on real emotion, really what you're tapping into, as opposed to overanalyzing words and phrases and the deep meaning between the lines. I know there are coaches who work that way and, you know, their talent that works for them. I just don't have that attention span.
Me neither.
You know,
that's where we get along.
For me, it's like I just want to get this done. What is the quickest route? And I'm not taking a shortcut. It's not like, you know, I want to cheat there. It's like what works for me. And I found, you know, when I was testing triggers on myself, it's like, well, if that's going to work for me, that could work for other people.
Did you ever try any of these triggers in any of the sessions that you were directing or had written a copy for, you know, your promo sessions?
In real, you know, broadcast network sessions? I did try a little at that time, what I call the little backstory. But again, at that level, I don't want, if it's broke, don't fix it. I didn't want to mess with that talent's process.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. When you started trying this out on talent that you were working with, that you were coaching, could you hear the difference with them as well?
Immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately. It was
night and day.
It was night and day. It was also a revelation and a validation. And so satisfying that people were getting it and starting to book using that technique.
Yep. In sessions, I use your triggers. Mm-hmm. So I'll say to the client, if I'm comfortable with the client, if you don't mind, I'm going to do a lead in. And I talk to the sound engineer about cutting it out, and they don't mind at all. And it really does land.
Yeah. Clients generally don't mind you do that. They're actually pretty used to it. And not just for my clients, but a lot of people use that. They may not call it a trigger, but a lot of people back it up a little bit.
So I know you're going to be teaching a workshop here in New York in June.
I'm very excited about it.
I am too. I can't believe you're finally going to be here. We're going to be in the same city together.
Woo-hoo. Same room. Wow.
Yay. What is your process in when you teach workshops versus coaching? Is it different? Is it the same?
It's actually pretty much the same. I will find something. What works for one person doesn't work for another. So within the workshop setting, I do try to find something that will resonate with you, and it may be something different for somebody else. And that's why I like workshops, because the participants get to see how different triggers and different choreography works for each person. And it's surprising. It's like, I'll tell you, okay, comedy hands, and you'll do it and you'll nail it. And the next person, it doesn't work. So maybe I'll have them put their hands in their pockets, and that brings it down to what they need to do. And it's great for people to see the different techniques and the different sounds. Now, what's interesting is that I use the same copy for everybody.
I was just going to ask you, are we using the same copy or a different copy?
You use the same copy. I'll give you a piece of copy, and then you'll hear each person's interpretation and how they can all be great and sound different.
What do you think makes someone's copy stand out? Because I know through working with you and being in the business for some time, it's not the sound. It's something deeper than that. It's kind of like underneath the sound. What do you think that is?
I think it is a connection to the material that makes it sound real.
Mm.
There's an old quote, if you can fake sincerity, you've got it, right?
Or just be sincere. How about that too?
There are times that works, but sometimes you're talking about something that you really don't care that much about, or you don't know the new product that's never been on the market before. So you do have to fake it, but you can't sound like you're faking it.
And that's where I found the triggers work, because I can't put myself in that space of, oh, imagining something that I like. For me, I'm able to run into the copy smoother.
Exactly. And triggers help you, because if it's a product you're not familiar with or you don't particularly use, you still need to make the copy personal. And to do that, we use triggers. You know, if we're talking about a car that you don't drive or maybe don't even know what it is, you and I will talk a little bit about a car that you do drive or a car that you would like to own or something like that. And in 30 seconds out of that conversation, we'll discover a trigger.
Mm. So I know your workshops are not for everyone. How can someone find out about the workshops and if it's right for them?
You can keep an eye on my website. I always list my workshops, jodygottliebvo.com. Mm-hmm. And if you're interested in a workshop, you email me right through the website, really easy, and ask me questions about it and tell me a little bit about yourself. I want to know the level. In the workshops, I don't take beginners. I don't want to spend the time on mic technique or anything like that. My workshops move very quickly. I treat them like real sessions. So if you're not up to speed, if you don't have much experience, they're probably not right for you. But go ahead and email me. Tell me about yourself. Mm-hmm. And if my workshop isn't right for you, I'll direct you to one that is.
And do we need to send our demos for you to listen to in advance or no?
No, actually, I prefer not to listen to demos.
Oh, why is that? I'm just curious.
I like to go in cold. Okay. I don't want any preconceived notions.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Plus, you know, I'm a demo producer. I know how they can be manipulated. So I don't know if that's your true sound.
Ah. That brings up a really good point. When would you say, or a good question, someone is ready to do a demo? Because I hear so many talent, they're like, you know, immediately out of the gate, they want to have the professional studio, the professional mic, and the demo. When do you recommend someone record a demo?
When you're ready and not a day before.
And how do you determine when someone's ready? Like if they come to you and they're like, Jody, I hear you produce demos, because you do that as well, correct?
Yes, I do. I don't produce demos for people I haven't worked with at least once.
Okay.
So if, you know, I can tell in one session if you're demo ready. And that is if you can get through copy, take direction, understand the material, and have a good sound for that genre, whether it's commercials, promos, narration, whatever you want to do. Because demos are produced a little differently than I teach in sessions, if somebody likes your demo, they're going to call you in. You have to be able to step up to that perfect level. I believe that demos have to be the highest standard that you put out there. Actually higher than what a real session would be. So
yeah.
you need to be able to step in and match that standard. And until you're ready to do that, I won't do your demo.
Do you produce demos for people that are not in LA, or do they have to be in LA?
Oh, no, I produce demos for people around the country. We do it from their home booth. I direct them and they do the editing. Uh-huh. They edit in the takes and send it to me via Dropbox, and I handle the rest of the production. Very simple process for the talent. Not so much for me, but for the talent.
So if people want to find out about the workshop as well as, because you still have a few more slots left, I believe.
I have a couple of slots open for New York.
Awesome. Yes. And if they want to find out about working with you either as a coach or demo producing, go to your website, jodygottlieb.com. Is that
jodygottliebvo.com?
Got it. Thank you, Jody, for taking the time to chat with me today.
My pleasure, Tina, always.
And I'll see you in a month, less than a month.
I'll see you in less than a month.
All right. Be well.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
Thanks for listening into this episode of Stories from the VO Booth. As I mentioned, Jody Gottlieb is my voiceover coach, and I am sincerely grateful for all that she has taught me and continues to teach me. If you want to learn more about Jody and her workshop here in New York or coaching with her, go to jodygottliebvo.com. And a reminder, if you haven't signed up for my free 5-day VO challenge, go to tinazvotraining.com/challenge. Until next time, here's to owning our voices.